You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
And the day is finally upon us. The 2019 election is finally here. I know this how because of, well, about 5 crore headlines, and also specifically because India's rap music pioneer and one of the true greats, Baba Sehgal, tweeted this morning, "Garmi hai, please don't wear a coat. Election hai, please go there and vote." In the trademark style that has come to be him, with verses like "Rajma ke baad thoda aa jata hai fart, I know baby it's heavy on your heart," he informed us that the elections are upon us. And when Baba Sehgal says it's time to go and vote, you just do it. Incidentally, Baba Sehgal is the best Indian Twitter handle you can find, and his recent resurgence, starting with of course going to the gym and then chicken fried rice, is the sort of comeback that we deserve in 2019. It is the return of the 90s. Did we ask for it to come back? Not quite, but here we are. Yeah. Baba Sehgal's resurgence aside, this moment that every political maneuver of the last 5 years was calculated for is finally here. Some call it a day of reckoning, as if you're supposed to believe anything will ever change. The media in India generally does go full cringe fest during Lok Sabha elections, calling it things like dance of democracy. Like I've said many times before on these podcasts, I do not get that phrase. Democracy isn't a dance, man. It's like I said, a long slog to death. But back to the tender democracy of India, or the resilient democracy of India, depending on which side you are speaking from, the greatest experiment in it is afoot. The first phase of voting in the 2019 general election took place today in 91 constituencies across 20 states and union territories. And we can't think of a better time to discuss the issue of Paisa. Most of us are aware that campaign finance is one of the biggest cesspools in the country, a murky stream of cash that never seems to run dry and is generally posited as the root of a large part of the staggering corruption in India. On today's edition of Decoding 2019, we'll be taking a look at the role of money in Indian politics and what solutions exist for the problems it poses. My name is Rakesh Sharma and you're listening to Money Control,
the Deep Dive podcast series.
For a nation that's obsessed with finding out the cost of everything, it is but imperative that we ask, how much does an election cost? Well, almost nothing if you're Donald Trump. Polarize people with popular slogans, make the press hate you, and you'll be on your way to becoming the most powerful person. But Indian politics is a slightly different ballgame. India's budget allocated 2.62 billion rupees to the Election Commission this fiscal year, a new high figure in itself. And what about candidates? A scrolled report stated, and I quote, "Officially, India has limits on election spending, 50 to 70 lakh rupees per Lok Sabha candidate and 20 to 28 lakh rupees per assembly candidate, depending on the state. In practice, research suggests that the reported expenditure of candidates only represents a minuscule fraction of their real expenses, frequently less than 1/30th or 1/50th of the overall amount," unquote. Milan Vaishnav, a senior fellow with the Carnegie Endowment and director at Carnegie South Asia, wrote in an essay called "Confronting the Challenge of Money in Elections" that Indian elections are, quote, "hyper-competitive." In 2014, there were 464 parties contesting elections across 29 states and 7 union territories. 8,251 candidates joined the fight for 543 parliament seats. 66.4% of the eligible voting public cast their ballots on election day. Now let that sink in. Over 8,000 candidates, and it costs money to campaign for votes. Vaishnav wrote, and I quote, "Parties and candidates spent as much as $5 billion American dollars on election-related expenditures, according to one independent study," unquote. He claims that the 2009 elections saw expenditures pushing $2 billion. Vaishnav wrote in another column, "For comparison's sake, the combined 2015-2016 United States presidential and congressional elections had a price tag of $11.1 billion, according to U.S. federal regulators," unquote. Bloomberg broke that down party-wise. It said, and I quote, "Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party has spearheaded moves to loosen campaign finance laws in India. The new rules let corporations, including those partly owned by foreign entities, fund elections anonymously. They also permit businesses to bankroll political parties through opaque instruments called electoral bonds and enable shell companies to be conduits for election funding," unquote. The changes, which the BJP claimed were designed to at least partially account for undocumented cash used during India's elections, could actually make it easier, even legal, for anonymous donors to support political parties. Bloomberg calculates that the total spend on the election ending the 23rd of May could rise 40% to $7 billion, or nearly 50,000 crore rupees, according to the New Delhi-based Center for Media Studies. To give you a rough comparison, the film industry in India had total revenues, combining domestic and overseas collections, broadcast rights, etc., of around 15,000 crore rupees. That means the cost of the current Lok Sabha election is more than three times the money Indian films earned last year. Don't believe me? An Economic Times report from 2017 stated that the film industry in India could touch $3.7 billion in 2020. That's just over half the cost of the 2019 elections. Meanwhile, social media spending by political parties is likely to be dramatically higher, surging to about 5,000 crore rupees from a mere 250 crore rupees in 2014. As much as 2,600 crore rupees will be spent on advertising in the upcoming elections, according to Zenith India, a firm that arranges slots on TV and in newspapers. That's more than double the 1,200 crore rupees that the Election Commission estimates that the two main parties spent in 2014. Economic Times reported that in February alone, more than 4 crore rupees were spent on political advertising on just one site, Facebook, as per the company's report. A caveat here, I must mention that estimates for this amount vary. The Economic Times claims election expenditure will be around 30,000 crore rupees, while Live Mint and Bloomberg claim, based on the observation by CMS, that is the Center for Media Studies, that it'll be in the vicinity of 50,000 crore rupees. 30,000 crore rupees or 50,000 crore rupees. After a certain amount of time, they all are pretty much the same thing. It's numbers with lots of zeros. Now that we have an idea of the amount of money involved, let's look at where it comes from. Campaign finance overhaul first began in 2017, when Parliament approved an amendment that made it easier for companies to donate to campaigns, including removing a cap on corporate donations. First, the finance minister announced that the ceiling on cash donations to political parties would be lowered from 20,000 rupees to 2,000 rupees in an effort to squeeze black money contributions. The Bloomberg article claims that the biggest innovation in India's campaign finance laws is the anonymous electoral bond. These electoral bonds bear little resemblance to the promissory notes investors are familiar with. What I mean is, buyers aren't paid any interest. Anyone can buy an electoral bond at the government-owned State Bank of India in amounts ranging from 1,000 rupees to 1 crore rupees. They're then delivered to a political party, which can exchange them for cash. They don't carry the name of the donor and are exempt from taxes. Voila! Finance Minister Arun Jaitley claimed they help improve transparency because they are banking instruments and every political party has to disclose how much it received. If full transparency is required, donors would go back to cash. The Economic Times explained that the amended various laws included the Income Tax Act, the Representation of Peoples Act, the Finance Act and the Companies Act, and that the scheme for electoral bonds is in the nature of bearer instruments capable of being purchased by a citizen or a company from a PSU bank. Earlier, the amount was capped at 7.5% of a company's average net profits over 3 years. Companies no longer need to disclose how much they donated and to which party. As per the new rules, new firms can also donate to political parties, opening the door, according to Bloomberg, for shell companies to be set up expressly for the purpose. However, those concerned about anonymous money in politics say changing the laws has offered little reassurance that the new measures are an improvement. Jagdeep Chokar, a former professor at IIM Ahmedabad and the founder of Association for Democratic Reforms, a group that researches elections, said, and I quote, "Electoral bonds have made political parties completely beholden to unaccounted money, which could even be foreign money or money from dubious sources. Corporate agendas can run the show." Unquote. Analysts claim those amendments benefit both the BJP and the Congress party. N. Bhaskar Rao, chairman of the Center for Media Studies, wondered aloud, and I quote, "Nobody from the opposition spoke up. Maybe everybody realizes they stand to gain if they come to power." Unquote. Ironically, Business Standard reported that the opposition parties like Congress, Trinamool Congress and CPIM are opposed to electoral bonds, alleging that it would benefit only the ruling BJP. Well, it only makes me think that those were perfunctory noises expected of them to be made, considering they too stand to gain. In any case, Rao has good reason to be cynical. In 2014, the Delhi High Court found both parties guilty of violating foreign exchange laws when they accepted donations from London-based commodities giant Vedanta Resources. Then, lo and behold, the law passed last year, changing the definition of a foreign company all the way back to 1976, effectively nullifying the court's verdict because Vedanta's overseas parent owned less than 50% of the Indian unit. The government defended the changes, saying they were intended to align the definition of foreign source with the nation's foreign direct investment policies and other laws barring political funding from abroad. Bloomberg's report also claimed latest official data showing that the BJP won the bulk of financing in the year ended March 2018, both through corporate donations and electoral bonds. In 2018, electoral bonds worth about 1,000 crore rupees were purchased, according to data obtained under RTI by Factly, a data journalism portal in India. About 90% were of the highest denomination available, which Bloomberg claims is out of reach for the average citizen. In comparison, companies in the UK are not directly allowed to make donations to political parties. In contrast, America allows unlimited funding through political action committees or super PACs on federal election campaigns, but requires them to disclose the names of donors, something that is not required. In India, Chokers Association for Democratic Reforms, that is ADR, went to court on the issue of electoral bonds. The Apex Court will pronounce its verdict later this week. Meanwhile, the Economic Times reported that the Centre and the Election Commission had taken contrary stands in the Supreme Court over political funding. The government wanted to maintain anonymity of the donors of electoral bonds, while the poll panel prefers revealing the names of donors for the sake of transparency. Attorney General K.K. Venugopal, who appeared for the government, argued, and I quote, "We have no policy of state funding of elections. Funds are received from supporters, affluent persons and companies. They all want their political party to win. If their party does not win, then they apprehend some repercussions and hence secrecy or anonymity is required," unquote. Senior lawyer Rakesh Dwivedi, who represented the Election Commission, said, and I quote, "Anonymity must go. We want transparency. We want reforms. We cannot go one step forward and take two steps backwards. We want free and fair polls," unquote. He added that the poll panel was not against the scheme as such, only against the anonymity attached to it. An analysis by Livemint paints a rather dire picture. Its report said, and I quote, "that the revised donation regime lacks transparency is not in doubt. It is also true that campaign finance has always existed in a dark zone. So the legitimacy given by electoral bonds to fundraising from dubious sources from abroad, for instance, can be viewed as a pragmatic shift that casts some light on at least one end of the tunnel. That is, party receipts. The fairness of an electoral system where one or two parties corner most of the legitimate funds on offer is another matter. Political parties that appeal to poorer voters, for example, are indeed at a severe disadvantage. A fairer system might require the state to pool all the resources mobilized and then split the money with all parties in the fray by an agreed-upon formula. By vote shares achieved in the previous elections, for example," unquote. Wait, what? That sounds like the business model of a franchise-based sports league. It is a safe guess to assume that such a rule has not found many takers. It goes without saying that cash is where the action is. An analysis by the Economic Times dismissed all the talk of electoral bonds. They may be the future, but the present is still ruled by cash. ET claimed that electoral bonds play a very small role in campaign finance. The report said, and I quote, "though no official data by the issuer of these bonds, that is the State Bank of India, is put in public domain, experts estimate all political parties together may not have managed to raise even 2,000 crore rupees through electoral bonds," unquote. That's right. In a 30 to 50,000 crore rupee election, only 2,000 crores, if at all, came from electoral bonds. ET claimed that currency with the public on the eve of 2019 elections has in fact posted one of the highest year-on-year growth compared with pre-election growth rates in the past seven elections. Currency with public rose 17.3% during 2018-2019. In 2008-2009, pre-election currency growth was 17.1%, 16% in 2003-2004, and 17.5% in 95-96. The only single-digit pre-election period growth in currency with the Republic was in 2013-2014, when it stood at 9.2%. A Times of India report also claimed that, according to economists, the gap between the growth rates of nominal GDP and currency in circulation is a good indicator of cash being deployed for election campaigns. That brings us to the red-hot issue of cash seizures, which is being strangely underplayed this year. The Election Commission has already seized cash, liquor and drugs worth over 1,400 crore rupees between the 10th of March and the 1st of April. That's about 3 weeks. The star of the show is, of course, Gujarat, which accounted for 509 crore rupees. The Income Tax Department's raids on politicians or people close to them in states like Madhya Pradesh, Karnataka, Tamil Nadu and Andhra Pradesh has unearthed cash like never before. Take Madhya Pradesh, for example, which has a Congress government. Times of India reported that IT officials claim to have unearthed a racket of collection of unaccounted cash of about 281 crore rupees in raids on people linked to Madhya Pradesh CM Kamal Nath. Meanwhile, in Hyderabad, Telangana, police seized 8 crore rupees of BJP's cash and the party blamed the police for high-handedness and said it was an example of undemocratic rule prevailing in the state. Then there was this gem of a sentence in a report from Andhra as reported by Scroll. And I quote, 100 people sat on a dharna in Khammam town after a local TRS leader failed to give them the promised money for attending a public meeting addressed by KCR, unquote. The report goes on to say, and I quote, meanwhile, in Andhra Pradesh, YSRCP election managers are worried that candidates and local leaders are being miserly. Leaders and candidates of both TRS and YSRCP are apparently confident that a KCR wave in Telangana and Jagan Mohan Reddy wave in Andhra Pradesh will sweep them to victory and hence are not spending enough money. Unquote. It is for this reason, among many others, that Indian parties seem to be increasingly depending on wealthy candidates. Nilanjan Sarkar, senior fellow at the Centre for Policy Research, wrote on the Hindustan Times, and I quote, "One needs to understand how candidates are selected and the policy-making role of legislators in India's political system. Even if a candidate wins his or her seat, anti-defection laws effectively prevent elected representatives from having much of a role in policy-making. In such a scenario, third-party actors have few incentives to invest in specific candidates, rather than a party at large. With little opportunity to raise outside funds, candidates must largely finance their own election campaigns. This has led to a rise of wealthy candidates." Unquote. Analyzing self-reported candidate affidavits for Lok Sabha elections between 2004 and 2014, Nilanjan Sarkar explained that the median total wealth of candidates grew by approximately 330% in nominal terms. Even adjusting for inflation, Sarkar claimed, the median wealth of candidates saw a rise of 116% in real terms. In the 2014 national election, candidates reported a median wealth of 23.8 lakh rupees, approximately 27 times the nominal per capita income of India in 2014-2015, which stood at 88,533 rupees, which is significantly wealthier than the general population. Sarkar infers that a wealthier candidate is about 10 percentage points more likely to win than a poorer candidate. No shit, Sherlock. He takes a dim view of the growing cost of the electoral process for individual candidates. He wrote, and I quote, "First, if candidates need to be wealthy to contest an election, only a small subset of the population can realistically hold office, resulting in legislators that have less in common with the citizens they represent. Second, if parties increasingly look at personal wealth to select candidates instead of characteristics such as education or constituency service, then elected politicians may become worse at representing their constituents. Most importantly, if campaigns must be self-financed, then candidates may view contesting elections as an investment rather than a sunk cost, leading to greater levels of corruption in office as legislators try to recoup the costs of contesting elections." Unquote. Investment or sunk cost? That might just be the most succinct summary of campaign financing in India.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
All said and done, this spectacle of democracy and this spectacle of spending has just come to play today. And it is a spectacle that'll go on for a month more. So it is one more month of interesting slash depressing podcasts such as these on Money Control. Do let us know what you think of them. mcpodcast@nw18.com. Hopefully you all voted and hopefully you made an informed choice. There is no such thing as a right choice or a wrong choice because it is a democracy and your vote is all that matters, however you choose to vote. But at least the least we hope through all the podcasts we've done and through all the talking that I've done, that you made an informed choice. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener, an even smarter investor, and the smartest voter.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.